This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
We all know that a Disney vacation can be magical, but did you know you can experience the happiest place on earth without breaking the bank? In today's episode, we sit down with Amanda Lebo, a seasoned Disney enthusiast and points and miles expert who shares her insider tips on how to use travel rewards to make your Disney dreams come true. From Disneyland in California to international parks like Tokyo Disney, Amanda's strategies will revolutionize the way you plan your next family trip. Whether you're a diehard Disney fan or just looking to save on your next vacation, this is the episode you don't want to miss. And before we get to the episode, I want to remind you, if you love our content and haven't already, don't forget to not only subscribe to this show, but also take a brief moment out of your day and leave us a 5-star rating and a review so we can connect with more travel enthusiasts just like yourself. Now, off to the show.
Imagine pursuing your dreams of exploring the world's most exquisite destinations without the extravagant price tag. This is the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, hosted by DeAndre Koch, founder of Boldly Go and an expert in financial planning as recognized by Forbes. This podcast is your bridge to a world where travel savvy meets luxury. With DeAndre's unique financial planning perspective, you'll glean insights on making the most of credit card loyalty points and miles for travel that doesn't just move you, but takes you places that you may have never thought possible. Expect the most up-to-date credit card strategies for points and miles, stories from successful professionals on how they integrate travel into their busy lives, and other captivating stories from around the globe. Whether you're a seasoned traveler or just starting out, join us in exploring the best of global travel and learn how to experience nearly free luxury travel around the world yourself. Your journey transforms here, igniting our revolution in the world of travel.
Welcome, everybody, to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast. I am your host, DeAndre Koch. Today, we have a very special guest who is an absolute expert when it comes to points and miles for family vacation, specifically to the happiest place on earth. And that is Amanda Lebo. She is a seasoned traveler and Disney enthusiast who has mastered the art of planning unforgettable family trips to Disney California Adventure, Walt Disney World, and she's even visited Disneyland Paris and Tokyo Disneyland, and she knows how to use points and miles to do these things as well. She's also a proud owner of a Walt Disney World annual pass and knows all the insider tricks to making the most out of a Disney vacation and doing so without breaking the bank. So super excited to have you on the show. Amanda, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Hi, thanks DeAndre. It's so good to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely, Amanda. So let me ask you this. Where in the world are you currently? Where are you from? What do you do for a living? Let's get some background on you before we start jumping into the Disney and the points and miles.
Sure. So I am currently in South Bay, Los Angeles area. It's a suburb of the LA area near Long Beach. I live here in the Beach Cities, so about 45 minutes or so from Disneyland. I actually grew up in Central California, so 3 or 4 hours north, and I am a practicing attorney, so I practice civil litigation here in California.
Oh, very cool. That is awesome. Okay, so we do civil litigation during the day, visit Disney parks at night, so a nice little balance there. So I got two questions for you. So first, how did you really find your love for like Disney specific vacations, travels, parks, all those different things? And then separately, I want to follow up with how did you get into the points and miles world? But we'll start with Disney, the love of Disney. Would love to hear how that got started.
Pretty much since I was a little girl, living in Central California, only being about a 4-hour drive from Disneyland, my parents every single year would take my siblings and I to the park. So that was kind of our big annual vacation. We would come down to Disneyland, stay for a few days. At that time, it was just Disneyland, not California Adventure. And I just fell in love with the parks. It became my happy place. And then even as I've gotten older and grown, I decided to get my own annual pass and start taking my son as well, since I had such a great childhood and great memories of the park visits.
That's super cool. So I know we were talking a little bit off air. I have not been to any of the Disney parks since I was like 7 years old. And I'm actually a huge Star Wars fan, so I really want to go to the whole like Star Wars themed Disney park. But that's a conversation for another time. But I'm super excited to have you on the show today, because the listeners know I am very much so in the camp of, no kids. And so not going to Disney World is not high on my radar, or Disneyland. However, I actually know a lot of adults that just go to Disneyland and Disney World just because it's fun. I have some friends that did their honeymoon there. So you don't have to have kids at the same time. So I know that exactly is, if you love Disney, you just love Disney and you go to Disney. So that's how we started. So it started as a love from just when you were young. And how did you get into the points and miles world? And then we're going to merge how these two things came together. So how did you get into the points and miles world?
Growing up, I didn't really get to travel on an airplane. My first time on an airplane was after I had graduated college. My mom, as a young girl, she moved around a lot with her dad, who was in the Army. So she was kind of tired of traveling. My dad was also in the Army, and he was stationed in like Germany. So by the time they met, they were both done with the airplane rides. They, preferred road trips. So I didn't really get a lot of experience traveling until I graduated from college. And actually in law school, I studied abroad for a few weeks in Italy. And that was kind of my first taste of international travel as a young adult. And I fell in love with it, but it was so expensive. I was a law student living on student loans. And if that program hadn't been offered by the university, that wouldn't have been a trip that I would have ever taken. So I had such a great time, but I had to come back and get my career started as a lawyer. And, being a first year lawyer, not really having a lot of money, travel wasn't necessarily the first thing on my radar. And then I met my husband a few years later after I had established a career practicing law, and he had ties in Croatia. So he had a lot of family who lived in Croatia. His Croatian family that lives here in the US would go back to Croatia and visit a lot. And so when we met, I was like, great, I'll be able to travel with this Croatian guy and go to Croatia and like scratch that travel itch that I had, right? But he, we had our son and we both just got busy with work, and he kept saying, it's too expensive, it's too expensive. And so I came across the points and miles world just randomly trying to figure out how I can get to this beautiful place that his family keeps talking about and how I can get my son to experience these things that I missed out on as a kid. And I kind of fell into the points and miles world through Travel Mom Squad. Was kind of the first group of ladies who got me going. And I opened my first credit card, the Chase Sapphire Preferred, and I got the points and I booked a trip to Croatia because it was just long overdue and I wanted to figure out a way to get us there. And we did. And that was my first taste into points and miles and really how I can make travel work for us with our busy schedules and busy lives and the high cost of living. And that was the start of this travel bug for me that I got in the points and miles world.
So you opened the Chase Sapphire Preferred, which is pretty much the number one most recommended card in the game of points and miles in general. And you got the sign up bonus, you got the points, and then you had a taste of the travel, the nearly free travel life. And that was all she wrote. That's what I just heard. Is that correct?
That's correct. I signed up for that card when they had like this all time high bonus that I've not seen since. It was like late 2021. It was 100,000 points. I used every single one of them in the travel portal, which I know now not to do. But as a novice, I thought just the fact that I was able to get these tickets was amazing. And so we were able to actually fly to London. And then we took a cheap cash flight over to Croatia. And my husband and son were like, we need to do more of this. So that's exactly what happened.
Got it. So that was the first taste. You made this trip happen. So did you eventually take other trips and then like Disneyland ended up weaving itself in? Or did you make it a goal to say, hey, you know, Disneyland's in my backyard. There's got to be a way to be a little more financially frugal with using the points to get in. How did Disney come to be in this system of points and miles after this first taste to experiencing Croatia?
Having traveled by car to Disneyland every year since I was a little girl and loving the parks and knowing that there were other international parks out there, obviously Walt Disney World, which I had only been to once as a child. We drove, by the way, from California to Florida.
Oh, wow. Wow.
You know, you hear a lot about the Six Castle Club. It's a club for people who've gone to all six of the Disney castles in the world. And so that's kind of been like a bucket list thing for me to do. And so once we took this trip to Croatia on Points and Miles, I kind of had this aha moment, was like, this is how I can join the Six Castles Club. I am a pro at Disneyland. I had been to Disney World a couple of times, but I want to get to Europe and I want to get to Japan and I want to get to China. And like these Points and Miles, like this is the way that I'm going to be able to do it.
Very cool. So before we start diving in on Disney specific, I'm curious, outside of Croatia, any other kind of landmark trips that absolutely just blew your mind for you and your family that wasn't Disney related?
So Bora Bora this summer was amazing. That was just a couple's trip. So it was just my husband and I. But we were there for, I think it was only four nights. I just couldn't get the fifth night to work in my work schedule. So it was four nights. We flew out there on KLM and used a Hilton free night certificate and some Amex rewards that I had transferred to Hilton and stayed at the Conrad Bora Bora, which was just amazing. And my husband, who isn't as much of a traveler as me, he wants to go to Croatia, but like that's pretty much all he's interested in. His experience in Bora Bora, he told me that he, like, we need to go back. So that was probably the most amazing non-Disney trip that I've taken recently.
That's absolutely incredible. Out of curiosity, did you use your points for economy or for business class?
We just flew economy. So being, I'm really the only points earner in our family. My husband, while he loves being able to travel and tag along, he hasn't quite got on board to the like opening cards and earning the points. So all the points earning really falls on me. So when we do the family trips, either the three of us, my husband and my son, or just my husband, those are the points that I've accumulated. And so in order to stretch them as far as I can, I usually prioritize economy seats. Although we also have done the, like when we flew to London, our first taste of Points and Miles, we flew Polaris. So typically it's economy because I like to stretch my points to go as far as they can for the three of us.
So I love that you shared that because oftentimes on our show, we talk about business class and the lie flat experience and all those different things, which as I know you know because you flew Polaris, right? It's an incredible experience. But at the same time, it is worthwhile acknowledging that, you know, points take some time to rack up and you might have a business class one-way flight that's 80,000 points, but the economy is only 20. And effectively, you could do that four times or for four people for what it would take for business class. And so I think when you are in a space like you are, where it's just you're doing player one and fingers crossed, we can get our husband as fit as player two here in the near future. I think that's a really cool call out for those that are listening that are saying, hey, it's just me either as a single parent, single individual, or their spouse isn't fully on board yet, that, hey, you can still have the amazing trip and have the amazing experience. It might not be in business class, but who cares? You're going to Bora Bora. So, right? It's a great experience all the way. And I'm sure, I mean, the Conrad in Bora Bora, I've seen pictures of it. It looks insane. So I'm sure it was just an incredible trip. I'm surprised your husband hasn't signed on already to be player two just off of that experience alone. But we'll cross our fingers for that.
Yeah, I'm trying. I've been trying. I thought that was going to do it. It's inched him a little closer, but we're getting there.
That's cool. That's awesome. So let's talk Disney. So Amanda, I know when it comes to points and miles, we typically are talking around booking travel, right? The airfare and the lodging, and we'll definitely cover that. But I am curious, kind of off the bat, is it possible in any way to use a credit card, whether points, miles, statement credits, whatever it may be, to be able to actually purchase park tickets or passes to get into Disney World or Disneyland?
So there is. It's not always going to be direct. You can usually do it in a roundabout way. And there are a couple of options that I've used in the past. First is, rather than buying tickets directly through Disneyland parks, like on the Disneyland or Disney World website, you can actually, if you have a Capital One Venture or Capital One Venture X, you can purchase your tickets through a trusted third-party agency like Getaway Today or Undercover Tourist is really popular as well. And by doing so, when you purchase through them, your tickets are going to code as travel versus purchasing directly through the park, they're going to code as entertainment or something else. So when they code as travel, Disney's your, you know, where you want to go and how you want to use your points, then you can use those miles to offset the cost of your tickets where you wouldn't normally be able to do that if you were purchasing directly from the Disney parks.
And you're talking about using the travel eraser function that Capital One provides, right? Because I believe only Capital One has that with their venture cards. It's not really a Chase or an Amex feature, correct?
No, that's Capital One. And in fact, that's why, you know, a lot of people talk about Chase, Sapphire Preferred and Reserve, and those are great cards. But when it comes to Disney, I'm a huge proponent of the Capital One Venture and Venture X cards exactly for that reason.
Got it. Got it. So when it comes to travel for you and maybe going to Walt Disney World or your trips to Tokyo and Paris, what have been your typical strategies? How have you found it best to try to use points and miles to get the family to these different parks that are not right there in California where you are?
Disney World on the East Coast, obviously, it's going to be a little easier. It's domestic, right? Chase is usually my go-to. I'm a big, I think most points and miles people are going to be big Hyatt fans. And Southwest, I haven't earned the companion pass, but it's on my radar for this year. But those Chase Ultimate Rewards that travel or that transfer to those two partners in particular have been a game changer for me when it comes to Walt Disney World. So I don't usually stay on property over on the East Coast when we go to Walt Disney World, though I know there are a lot of reasons why you should and extra benefits that come with that. But at the end of the day, saving money is my main goal. So I'm able to find Hyatt Hotel nearby for like 15,000 points and transfer those points from Chase and then transfer to Southwest to get our domestic tickets for 10,000, 15,000 points. So I'm really, when it comes to travel, at least to the East Coast, looking for more off-property opportunities. So as far as international parks, Tokyo specifically is really unique in that the way that I was able to purchase my tickets there. So aside from the points that I used on the flight and the hotel, I purchased my tickets through, it was a website called Klook, which is kind of like Expedia. But by doing that, using my Capital One, I was able to again apply the Capital One miles to offset the tickets there. And then I found that everything that I purchased directly from the parks also coded as travel. So any food, any merchandise, where here in California, that would code as dining or merchandise. In the Japan parks, I found out that it was able to code as travel. So again, bringing my Capital One card, the Venture X, and using those miles to offset the food and the merchandise purchases was really unique to that specific park in Tokyo and the Tokyo Disney Sea Park. Because that's just not something that you're able to do here in California.
Hey, it's DeAndre here, and we're going to interrupt this episode real quick to tell you about two great opportunities for all of you. First, join our private Facebook community to connect with fellow points and miles enthusiasts, get exclusive tips and updates, as well as get your questions answered directly by me and others in the community. And if you're looking to level up your points and miles skills, we've partnered with Lux Travel Hacks to offer you 50% off their online course that will teach you all the basics you need to know to learn how to travel in business or first class, all for less than you'd pay for economy. Don't forget to use the code BOLDLYGO at checkout. You'll find all the details and links to both of these in the show notes. Now, let's get back to our episode. So, talking about the Disney parks overseas, what was your experience there for you and your family at like a Tokyo Disneyland or Paris compared to what you've experienced here in the States? Is it very similar? Is it a world different? Would love for the families that are listening that are like, is it worth it to go that far outside of making it that bucket list item of being hitting all six castles? What was the experience like overall in these parks?
So there are definitely some similarities. You as you walk through the gates, the layout is very similar and you get the same kind of Disney vibes, but the experience, at least at Tokyo and Paris, the two international parks that I've been to so far, is unique in that they're really immersive of like the specific culture. So like Japanese in particular, I found that cast members are always amazing, but the ones in Tokyo just went above and beyond. Hospitality is such a huge thing in Japan generally, and that's really reflected in the parks. I think the biggest difference for me was the lightning lane system. In Tokyo specifically, you can't reserve lightning lanes or fast passes, as they used to be called, for specific rides until you actually scan your ticket to get into the park. So while here in the US and more specifically Walt Disney World, and you can plan and you can stack up your lightning lanes before you actually get into the parks, Tokyo, it's like a mad dash. As soon as people scan into the parks, you have to have your phone ready to go. So you're making all of these lightning lane reservations so that you can get on the rides that you want to get on. So that was kind of the biggest difference to me, at least when it came to Tokyo. With Paris too, same thing. You know, you're immersed in European culture, so you have a lot of European type foods. So instead of churros, you have beignets. And so it was really cool for me to see the different cultural aspects of each of those specific parks shine through. But again, you're still in Disney, so you know the castle, the characters. You're still walking around in this like world of magic that Disney's created.
You mentioned staying at Hyatt when it came to staying at Walt Disney World. Are you typically frequenting Hyatt properties for Paris and Tokyo, or are there off property options in the points and miles world? Or are you really going to be looking at more so an on property, maybe paying cash for those type of stays?
Yeah. So in Tokyo, I stayed in an off property hotel. It's called the Grand Nikko. It wasn't affiliated with Hyatt. I was able to book it. I think through Klook is how I booked it. And I did pay cash. The cash rate I found was cheaper. And because I was able, again, to use my Capital One miles to offset that cost, it just made more sense to me in that moment instead of staying on Disney property. Paris, I actually did stay in a Disney hotel. It was cash. It was something that, you know, at the end of the day, the thing about Disney is that it's going to be expensive regardless of you know, how you try to cut costs. And that's why the points and miles come in so handy, because you have to have that expectation that the tickets and the merchandise and the food's going to be high. So being able to offset any, you know, airfare, any lodging that I can, helps. That being said, there is a special experience that you get in these Disney properties. And so that's why with Paris, I kind of splurged. I was able to book the Art of Marvel hotel and my tickets all together. And that was just more of an out-of-pocket expense that I knew was going to just cost a little more, because I can't always use my points and miles on every aspect.
Very cool. So, Amanda, you're an expert at navigating Disneyland and Disney California Adventure and taking the kids there. You've been to these other parks. I'd love to know, maybe transitioning a little bit away from the points and miles scene and just more into general Disney travel, what are some of your top tips for families using the Disney parks?
Yeah, so my first piece of advice, really, if you can be, would be to be flexible. The park prices change depending on day of the week. There's off-peak and on-peak pricing. So to the extent that you can be flexible, and you can take advantage of some of not just the off-peak pricing, but the special ticket deals that Disney rolls out, that's really beneficial for families. I know Disneyland, for instance, just released a kids ticket deal for the first couple of months in 2025. So if you have that flexibility, taking advantage of those special offers is a really great way to save money at the parks. And prioritizing what you want to do when you get to the park, especially with little kids. I know that it can be kind of frustrating at times. The kids get tired and they get overtired and, you know, tantrums. And so you really have to prioritize what you want to do. If you get to the parks early and you could hit a few of your favorite rides in like Fantasyland, that way a couple hours into your day, you can go to, you know, take a break in a quiet area of the park. There's theaters, there's little park benches that you can sit down. There's baby care centers, which I think are very underutilized, where you could go. And, you know, there's microwave and formula and stuff that you can use, and just places to sit and nurse for mothers. And then mobile ordering, I think, is huge. That is a really big time saver. You can, as soon as you get into the park in the morning, you can start mobile ordering your food and line up your food for the day so that you're not waiting in long lines to eat. I know my son, when he gets hungry, he gets really frustrated. And so I'm very hangry. My husband's the same way. So I will try to, even if I have a ballpark of where we might be in the park, I'll try to line up my order for the day. You could always change the windows, but to know that something's coming down the pipeline and it's just one less line that you have to stand in, I think is a great way to make the day a little more, you know, tolerable once people start getting tired.
Now, I'm sure this is going to vary from park to park, but by chance, is there a better time of the year, less crowded, less expensive time frame to visit the parks, or is it pretty even? It's always going to be busy. It's always going to be expensive. I know you mentioned there's like off peak days and times, but I'm just kind of thinking from a, you know, for someone's looking at their whole year or their year as a whole, and they're trying to say, well, maybe we should go in the spring or the fall or the winter. Is there a more ideal time frame?
I would say specifically with regard to Disneyland and Disney California Adventure, January to mid to late February. So after all the holiday stuff is done, you're going to see less crowds. Obviously, you're not going to get to experience the holiday decor, but January and February leading up to spring break are probably the best times for California parks, at least. And I imagine Walt Disney World's probably similar. And then also the period of time between when summer ends, so like the kids go back to school mid to late August, through September. Because once you get into the end of September, October, then Halloween decorations pop up and then starts to get more crowded. So I would say January, February, late August, early September are some sweet spots for the park.
Very nice. Well, Amanda, before we wrap this one up, do you have any other tips around either points and miles as it regards to Disney vacation, Disney travel, or just in general that you'd like to share with the listeners? Any specific hacks that you have in the points and miles world or the Disney space that you think maybe aren't known or are underutilized?
One thing that I think is underutilized is, so Disney Vacation Club is kind of Disney's timeshare that they offer. There are members that are they're owners of Disney Vacation Club. They utilize point systems, but you can rent those points. So oftentimes DVC owners, and there are some reliable ones out there like David's Rentals, and I actually gone through Pixie Point Gals. They're on Instagram, but you rent their points and then you're staying in a DVC property on, it's not just at the parks, like you can go to Aulani and do this, and you could get a room or a villa for half of what you would pay had you just booked through Disney directly. And so this, even just in the last couple of years, being in the points and miles world and getting connected with some Disney fans and Disney DVC owners, is something that I've started to utilize as well. And I don't know if a lot of people know that you can rent those points, but that I think is a huge way to save money if you want to stay at the parks or at a Disney resort specifically.
Very cool. I love that. And actually, the Pixie Point Gals, they are actually going to be on our show in a couple months. So we already have it scheduled with them, the interview and the recording. So I'm excited to have them on and to talk through the Disney Vacation Club side of Disney points and miles travel.
They are the pros.
They are the, that's what I've heard. That's why we're getting them on the show. So Amanda, out of curiosity, where are some of your next upcoming travels, trips with points and miles? Anything that's a bucket list item that you're planning on checking off here in the near future, or that you're saving up your points for right now currently?
I booked tickets for the family, so the three of us, to go to Europe to check out some Christmas markets for the holiday season. And then I turn 40 next year, so I have a trip to Greece with my sister lined up. So we're going to go to Athens and Santorini and Crete.
Very cool.
Yeah, and then I think my next big trips, I just need to knock those last two parks off my list. So Shanghai and Hong Kong, I think are going to be 2026 trips for me. So those will be points that I'm starting to accumulate now through Amex and Chase, Capital One, all the various banks that I get my points through.
That's awesome. Have you already booked or set your dates yet for your trip to Greece?
I have. I did that a couple weeks ago, so we'll be there in like mid-May.
Perfect, perfect time to go. That's when we went as well, and it's right before the ramp up of the tourist season. And so especially in like Santorini, it's super chill. The locals that work in the restaurants and they work in the travel industry, they're not like exhausted of tourists yet. So the attitude's super friendly, and you're just going to have an absolute blast in Santorini. And my one piece of unsolicited advice for Santorini, don't just spend all your time on the cliffs, because those are gorgeous, but on the backside where it's the beaches, there's some really cool lounging beach club areas on the backside that no one ever talks about, because they're always talking about the front side, which is the cliffs and the amazing views. So you'll have a blast in Santorini. And I'm jealous. We didn't get to Crete. We did Mykonos and Athens instead. So, but you'll have a fantastic time in Greece. It's an amazing country to visit.
I'm so excited. I've always wanted to go to Greece, and this is going to be my first time. So I figured I'm turning 40 and might as well do it now.
Do it big. I love that. Amanda, how can the listeners get a hold of you? How can they follow you? What's plug all the socials, all the things you got.
Yeah. So right now I'm just on Instagram and TikTok. I'm at magic_and_miles. One of these days when I find the time, I'll get a blog going. But for now, you can follow all my Disney and travel adventures on Instagram and TikTok, Magic and Miles.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, Amanda, two questions left for you before we go. The first is, who next should we have on the show? And you can't say the Pixie Point gals because they're already coming.
That's who I would have said. Who should you have on the show? So have you had like Annie from Let's Travel Talk on the show? She does the rollerblading and
I have not.
I love Annie. Obviously, I'm a huge fan of the Travel Mom Squad. They're the ones who got me into this Points and Miles world. I know they're really big in the Points and Miles community. So Annie or Travel Mom Squad, obviously Pixie Point Gals, those would be some of my top selections for you.
Perfect. Well, Amanda, last question for you. Any final thoughts, any last words of advice, piece of advice when it comes to Disney, Points and Miles, travel, civil litigation, whatever you got that you want to throw out there, any last final words that you got for the listeners?
I just want to say that travel, this is not something that I ever would have imagined myself doing, you know, like travel's expensive. Disney's expensive. I think that through using Points and Miles, either through, especially with when it comes to Disney Adventure X, transferring your Chase points to Hyatt's, I think that this hobby, I'm going to call it, is something that has opened up so many doors for me, and not just for me, but for my family. I don't think that I would be, I know that I wouldn't have gone to any of these places but for Points and Miles. And like one of my big things as a mom is I want my son to be able to see the world that I never got to see. And Points and Miles has been my way to do it. So whether it be Disney or non-Disney, I'm so grateful to have figured out this world because it's opened a lot of doors for us.
Amanda, I love that you said that. Thank you for being on the show today. Thank you for talking about not just Disney, but the impact that Points and Miles has had in your life for you and your family, because I think that can sometimes get lost in the shuffle, especially in the space of when you're following content creators or even listening to podcasts. And we talk about the experience and the lounges and the business class and all those different things. Sometimes it gets lost the fact that what people are able to do, which is actually what the show is about, they're able to revolutionize their journey, right? They're able to revolutionize their travels. They're able to do travels differently and go places and see things that they otherwise wouldn't have been able to, or they would have never thought that they could do because of the cost being prohibitive or whatever it may be. So I love that you ended on that note. It was fantastic hearing your story today, hearing about yourself and your family, your travels, the fact that you used Points and Miles for the first time to go to Croatia, and that ended up just creating what has now been a lifestyle of travel, and just really appreciate you taking the time out to be on the show today.
Of course. I was so happy to be here. Thanks again for having me on.
You're absolutely welcome. And to our listeners out there, thank you for tuning in. If you found this episode helpful, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with someone who's planning their next Disney adventure. Make sure to follow Amanda when you get a chance. And until then, happy travels, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks for tuning in to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, brought to you by Boldly Go. Hit that follow button so you don't miss out on new episodes. For deeper insights and to level up your travel game with our strategies, make sure to follow us on our social media platforms and sign up for our newsletter to stay in the loop. Head over to www.boldlygo.world to learn more. As DeAndre is not operating through this podcast as a fiduciary and/or financial advisor, this should not be considered personal financial advice. The information covered and posted has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The strategies and results referenced on this site, while proven, are not guaranteed. While most who apply the principles referenced will achieve similar results, you may not yourself. Your results will vary and depend on many factors that may be in or out of your control, but include factors such as your credit score, financial status, business experience, etc. It is your responsibility to consume and implement these recommendations at your own risk. We cannot be held responsible for any failure to do so.
Luxury flights and hotels can be had for free. The world of points and miles sounds too good to be true, but it's actually real, but only if you know what you're doing.
On Frequent Miler on the Air, Greg and I'm Nick, discuss all the ways to earn points and miles and use them for outsized value.
Join us every Friday for our full episodes and every Tuesday for our quick, single-topic coffee break episodes.
See you there.